now than I did before after just reading and browsing through that book, because there are some folks within the organization I work for, they're still in the mindset of the old bureaucratic, whereas we had that email, electronic, digital process that everyone has to adapt to. So it's not like you come in, you sit, and you do your, you know, A to Z processes, but in between that, you still have to deal with the digital aspect or the email and the continuous communication by email and telephone. So that's a,
yeah,
it's like multitasking is actually a way of life now in the new work environment because of this. So everyone is being changed. A lot of them don't recognize it, but it's fun to,
yeah,
for me to recognize it and to surf through it. But it's really different. It's really different. Just if someone right now would compare whatever type of work they're in, what they're doing now compared to what they were doing like maybe even like 10 years ago, it's totally different.
Yeah.
We're being mutated in a way. I mean,
so the media environment being, to the degree you're your media, you're being mutated, but
yeah,
not completely your media.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still in 90s. I don't have any of this digital life. And this has been going on for 10 or more years, right, this thing. I don't walk around with anything, so I'm not looking and communicating. When I come home, I look at my computer, and that shows me emails and maybe occasional phone message. And that's all I got. So I don't have any of the skills that people have in scanning, clicking, whatever they do with their fingers on the screen that they touch, the little iPhone screen. So I'm quite out of date with those sensibilities or those pressures that you're describing everybody has at work. I got no experience in that. So I'm on my chip body level, I'm quite out of date in experience. I concentrate on having the meaning without the experience. I'm always making up patterns about what's going on. It's based on nothing. It's not based on experience. I'm the first instant replay philosopher, and I never thought of this before. I'm describing many experiences, many meanings that I've had no experience in relation to. Really. I make up.
Yeah.
Now, that could be kind of, since I was doing that all these decades and kind of predicted ION, I count on ION keeping me ahead of everybody or whatever level I have to be. ION is my ground, my blanket, security blanket. You know, it's, I'm always knowing things that people don't know about. So what is that? That could be chemical body information. I've retrieved my chemical body, and even it incorporates a bit of the astral body too. So chemical and astral body, that's what I'm keeping ahead of. I'm not up on my TV. Lately, last few years, I'm up on TV because I watch a lot of TV shows, even though it's kind of irritating, but I've got many hours, and I like to look at something passively without having to make an effort. You know what I mean? So pass some time that way. And so I'm probably quite informed in the TV body consumption, not on the Oprah Winfrey talk shows, but on particular TV shows. And my chip body is very retarded. Like, I don't even have a digital phone here. I'm using some kind of mobile LAN fucking thing. I don't even know what it is. Doesn't have much on it. It has nothing on it. No neon lights. But I keep ahead. Okay, so what I'm advanced in is the mystery body.
Yes.
And chemical body information, since Ion will talk about Henry VIII, Leonardo and all these people, I can find out a bit of their chemical body history and maybe a bit of their mystery body history. That's the information. But that is not, it doesn't influence my being, that kind of information. So I know about, you know, the three Jesus and that, unless it expands my mind that loosens up ideas so that the mind can't be trapped, and that helps my mystery body experience. So yeah, I may be behind the chip body, but I'm ahead on the mystery body, if there isn't a head. Or I'm still exercising myself, I'm still growing, I'm not just retiring and falling back and leaving the chip body experience. And then, you know, I'm hoping, well, soon, when people can start talking, that's going to be hilarious, when people have speech recognition. Like, when's that coming in?
Yeah. In some parts it is. I mean, they have the Siri on the iPhone where you can talk and, you know, say email someone or something. So it's sort of there already, but it'll probably become more interactive.
Yeah.
But there's something I wanted to, this is sort of on the subject, but I wanted to talk to you just about like 2 weeks ago. I think it was Jenny. She played the, you played it on What Youth, the Four Levels of Bob Ecology. And right at the end, there was one section, and it blew my mind that I couldn't hear the rest of it, but because there was something you were describing on the fourth level, that we would become fractals, but then you mentioned that we would become like atomic beings, and I was like, holy shit, that's Ion talking to Bob.
Yeah.
2 years ago, when I heard the you know, what are your bodies made of, and Ion laid out this whole thing about cells. So they came through already used. I mean, it's almost like you are ahead of yourself because that's in Bob Ecology. You talked about.
Yeah, let me say this, Bert. The McLuhan said in 1955, we are a super civilized subatomic people. Super civilized, that would be advanced literate kinetic technologies that come out of the literate technocratic world, and subatomic, that's the discarnate, disembodied electronic dispersal of your chemical body. So I'm pretty sure when I said super civilized, subatomic, I didn't want to say all the words, so I just went atomic. I'm pretty sure that's what I was meaning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't imaging what Ion said. But, again, McLuhan's, he's the only guy saying, I'm super civilized subatomic. That's high-tech first world overlaid with electronic telegraphic effects. So just those words I could come up with avant-garde or prophetic statements using McLuhan. That's why reading McLuhan tonight, we should recognize, man, there's a guy saying Ionic things, but not referring, unless he means it metaphorically, but he can point to a whole technical environment that has those characteristics. That's how I got ready for Ion, because I was talking McLuhan and ad-libbing or improvising, mutating, sub-denying the McLuhan knowledge. And that sounds like Ionic Prophet, you know? And it was, but we have to recognize how much it was just me playing with McLuhan.
Did I hear earlier, because I made scribble some notes when I was just listening, you were quoting McLuhan and said, McLuhan said art is the liaison between biology and technology. Did he say that?
Yeah, that's the opening paragraph. Yeah, you were on there when I started reading that, didn't you? Or maybe not. You came.
I came in later.
A little later. That's, you want me to read you the opening paragraph? That's what it was. Yeah, let me just. No, it's important. But see, reading this essay the other night, I said, "Wow, this has got so many neat." Just casually, verbally stated Ionic positions, or what sounds like Ion, or Ion says what McLuhan's saying, but with a different meaning, a reference to the mystery body, to our deeper being. But the words are the same between McLuhan and Ion. And, you know, nobody was talking casually like this at the time as a super educated professor. You know what I mean? Nobody was saying these kind of things. This contains all the past and all the future. Nobody would even believe that. They wouldn't say it. They wouldn't believe it. But he knew something. He was partly right. So McLuhan begins the lecture. I propose to consider art as a liaison between biology and technology, among other things. So he was talking about the artifacts were invented by the cortex of the brain, but the brain stem was more ancient and was the instinctual life. And the brain stem, particularly the diencephalon, could not see, did not react to the artifacts, like the control of fire, early tools. But these things were affecting the cortex. So there was a split in the human being between his instinctual responses and what the cortex was creating. And art was the mediator between the brainstem's instinctual center, body regulating center, and the cortex. Okay? That simple.
Yes. Very. But was there, there was another, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I took a second note. A second note was art is going to bridge the cortex with the brainstem. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. The instincts don't recognize second nature, which is technological evolution. It is biology. It's reacting like an animal. It's the Darwinian nature, or whatever you want to call it. Now, this may not be true at all when Ion comes in. You know what I mean? This is McLuhan's pattern,
yeah.
You know, 40 years ago. And he said the role of art is to be a protecting buffer between the conflict between the new second nature evolution of technology and the instinctive biological evolution in the brainstem. There's a gap. Humans are reacting to new environments without knowing what they're reacting to. They can't see it. Artifacts were invisible to the brainstem. And so then he quotes A.T. Simeon's Man's Presumptuous Brain, and who goes into the details of this. Of course, that person doesn't say art is the interface between the two. That's McLuhan's, you know, genius innovation there. So McLuhan didn't think that serious art was a frivolity or a decoration. It had a perceptual role to translate the new back to the past. Compromise.
Yeah, because when I heard that, it stimulated. Yes.
No, okay, go on. It stimulated.
Stimulated a memory, because I remember asking Ion about the corpus callosum. And I asked them if it was enlarged, and they didn't respond. So then I asked, was it stimulated? And they said, do. Yes.
Yeah.
So the ions art.
Go ahead. Ions art. What?
Ions are interacting with ion, like what you say, just to throw words at them, is actually an effect on our corpus callosum, our whole perception of our interaction with them.
You're saying that the ions affecting the brain? Yeah, of course.
Yes.
The corpus callosum might be affecting parts of your form that you don't know about, like the etheric form.
Yes. Yes.
So, Bert, you walk to work, drive to work, or bike to work?
I take a bus, and then I take a little tram or trolley. Yeah.
Right. So you mingle with people.
Yes.
You know, every day you go into the mass, and then you deal with people at work. Now, what am I going to say? What's my next sentence?
Am I noticing anything? Do I interact with them?
No. How many people live like me? I walk to the beach every day. Nobody to say hi to. Nobody interacts with other than walking by tourists on the walkway on the beach who are looking at their iPhones or spanking their kids or trying to get me to fuck them or something, you know. There's very little interaction. I like to marvel at the way I live. I know my beautiful home, and I walk a beautiful landscape, hardly anybody around, might have to dodge a golfer or two, then walk down the people, down the walkway and walk anonymously through to the beach, swim, and then come back. That is my environment. I don't get on a bus. I don't get on a subway. I don't get in a car. I hardly talk to anybody. Maybe say hi to the woman at the canteen. Now think of that. What's it like to live like that? It, with no cell phone. I'm walking around like a fucking homeless caveman, you know, in relation to most people.
Yeah.
Yet I've got this most avant-garde situation. And, you know, I'm walking with no clothes on and not many clothes, getting nice sun exposure. Got maybe some suntan lotion here and there, but walking in beautiful weather. Now, that's all I know, Bert, in my daily experience. So am I missing out on something? What am I missing out? What am I enhancing? What am I retrieving? What am I obsolescing? You can't hear me?
Can I hear you. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me? No, I'm.
Yes.
I am trying to reflect on that, and I don't think you're missing anything, but you're engaging yourself, your environment.
Right. That's my chemical body. Now, I spend considerable time reading emails and responding to statements. So I do have an active chip body. But people like to measure themselves in their chemical body life. And they have a lot of industrial interactions they've got that they're used to, not a problem. But I just marvel on the limited level of my chemical body experience. It may not be limited. I may be flipping back and forth different worlds and all kinds of stuff that Ian would tell me I'm doing. But what I don't have to show up to anybody. I don't have any obligations to anybody. Money flowing freely and easily to me constantly. It's actually, you know, pretty. If I'm walking around like that with my awareness, my knowledge, I must be leading consciousness. I must be doing something. I can see where I'm a king walking around, you know, living in a very privileged, secure, pampered environment. I don't have to cook anything. Yeah. All I have to do is just notice what Carolyn's eating, notice what she doesn't eat, and grab that. Grab the leftovers. And then I have her to interact with. So the only person I'm working with is this beautiful person who's doing incredible things all over the place on her computer. That's who I get to interact with. It's pretty much Adam and Eve. Really is an Adam and Eve situation with these accoutrements from, if New York City was part of Babylon, you know, we hear that, we learn that, New York City's been around for thousands of years, then the external, the fact I've got 20th century gadgets, 21st century things here is not minor, but doesn't matter what is in the outer kingdom. It is this lack of interaction with other beings, with interruptions. You know what I mean? And just with this other person.
Yes.
I think it's pretty... What?
No, it is. If you really look at it from how you just described it, it's the perfect scenario.
Yeah.
For someone to live and then to feel creative. I mean, because you are ahead of a lot of us because of what you've done, and it's manifested now. So now you're sitting on top of the world.
Yeah.
Standing
and I am on
the
side of the tallest mountain in the world. I'm on the side of it.
That's right, yeah.
Remember that.
So it's a not, it's a real literally, you are on top of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I could go up and hang out at the top of the world, but I go down the side a bit and go only a little up towards the top of the world. But I'm on the structure, the environment that is one of the highest mountains in the planet. It's 500 feet or something higher than Mount Everest.
Wow, that's
and
what
I don't have to
count,
put up with
that.
What?
They count that because part of it's still in the ocean, but they still count the height of it. Is that correct? That's how they. Yeah.
It's one big mountain that comes up from the bottom of the sea. It's 20,000 underwater and 10,000 above water.
Wow.
It's a perfect environment for beaming out ionic energies. Like there may be us interacting with ion all these years so continuously. Who knows what has happened to me and Carolyn, you know, interacting with non-physical like that in a pretty free-flowing situation. We're not having a session and sending in $100. You know what I mean? There's no bureaucratic money involvement. So constantly talking to a Harry Potter situation where, you know, God's sitting there. We're like God. We have God in the Garden of Eden with us. God spoke to Adam. We got God speaking to us or something that's pretty close to what that could be. And what is that? We may have our being, which could include etheric forms, chakra forms, physical forms, chromosome, all the part that makes up my being, which would include parts I don't know, it may be so massaged by ion. Ion has said that I've taken RNA drops for so long that my body's not like any other human beings. I got a mutated body. So we got that, and that can be, hearing that could get me ready for the idea that we have become huge, incredible forces on the planet. And that's why things gather around, like Roxy, we could say it's her own power, I'll give her that. But let's say the fact she's interacting with us and doing projects with us, like these videotapes, that means the emanation coming off of us is affecting her reality. And that's why she's getting all the synchronicity all the time.
Like the
because Ion says, Ion has... Yeah. And she's just following her own instinct. Okay, what Zappa talks about monsters. Let's look up these Japanese monster movies. Blah, blah, and then she ends up understanding Leonardo da Vinci. Now, Ion says that Sue Bone, Sky God Sue, controlled the fate of Air Canada. Sheila controlled the fate of this airplane strike back in April 2010. Sasha controlled Canada somehow. And maybe you control Europe or something. Rubbing up against Ion has added something to your being on the social level that you don't know about. But so when Ion says, you know, Bob, you're the most powerful person on the planet, I can actually entertain that thought as a reality only because I'm rubbing up against Ion. And I wouldn't know how it manifests in particulars, but why worry about it? It's being done. And living in this test tube perfect Adam and Eve environment, well, at least I like it. It's perfect for me. Other people might say, no, I like driving my car. I want to go speeding down the highway, you know. So, okay, they do that. And that's part of the joy. And they wouldn't understand the limited experiences I'm having. But it could be that I'm walking around like a hollow ghost, and I've got all these other levels going on, so that's why I have to keep it simple. Simple interaction in the Garden of Eden level. But I am interacting with the data on the internet, the chip body, like anybody else. You know, I'll look at the Judge Report or look at this and that. People send me articles, look at YouTubes. One thing about preparing the music is really rekindled my awareness of music, my knowledge of music. I really learned a lot the last 3 years doing that. Really like that. Discovered a lot of neat music. So I can go over there, and it's like Kim. She just grabs a show, random show, clicks on the first hour, and enjoys the music. That's what I do. There's so much really great music.
Yes. It seems, I remember Ion, there's so much that they've outlined since they came back in 2014, but I remember them saying something about music, and they're always instances. But it seemed to me that my whole... When I listen to music, it's different now because I I don't know. I don't recollect. I mean, before I used to be partial to certain types of music. Yes, maybe that's what it is. It's like, wow. I mean,
I appreciate it. All kinds of music.
Yes. Actually, your last week, your whole track last week, I saved. I'm going to go back and listen to that. Last week was special for some reason. I don't know what, you know, it was just so invigorating. It had so many moods in it that I actually saved it and want to go back, re-listen to it, because it was just, I'm like, man, what is this with music? Because it's all types of music now that I can listen to. I mean, what you play, is mainly what you play, it does something. And I remember when one of the interactions, that there's something about Ion being behind the music or something. I don't know what it is, but it's just, my ears are better, maybe. I mean, maybe my whole...
Well, I am enjoying all kinds of music. I enjoy any kind of music. Doesn't matter what. It's almost like you're in a sort of a loving, accepting mood where you enjoy anything that's expressed to you, no matter what it is. And then the fact it's musical makes it even more fun, because music is generally often pretty pleasurable.
Yeah. And that's why I asked about that question and want to discuss with Rossana, because when I listen to Zappa's music, it seems that he really puts a lot more, I mean, I don't know what, I'm very ignorant what I'm saying about notes and chords, because I don't know the difference. I mean, I you know, music intimidated me. But anyway, it just seems that there's a lot more sound in his music than normal.
Way richer. Way, like you say, many more notes, many more sound bites crammed in there.
Yeah, and it goes back to, like, what I heard. And it's...
Go ahead.
No, it's just... Because it's something that George Duke said. He said that, you know, he said, Frank put so much into... I mean, he could take... Because he gave the same description that you've said before. He takes... What blew George Duke's mind is that Frank could take, you know, so many different types of sounds that you wouldn't think that would come together, and he could put them together, and somehow it would come out and sound beautiful. And he said that's always blew his mind, how he could take that. And then that struck me, because there's really a richness in his sound. That's why I wanted to ask Roxana, is that what is he doing? I mean, he really mixes a lot more into it. I don't know what it is, but maybe she can, from her musical background, explain that to me.
Well,
it's really curious.
It's his multi-track studio. He's got the state-of-the-art studio, and he can layer things in there, you know, to the extreme. But I like this statement. We played it last week. Let's see, where is it? Steve Vai is talking about Frank. And where is it? Still looking, just a second. Still looking. There it is. Listen to Steve Vai. I like this opening statement.
I think the definition of a genius is a person that's able to call into play this inspiration very simply and organically at any time they want. And I've seen Frank do this constantly. But then again, there's times where even, you know, you're at your best. And at this particular event, which was Soundcheck, Zoodalore's Halloween, New York City Palladium, Frank just played the guitar like I've never seen anybody in my life.
Okay, that's a pretty good statement. You know, a genius is a guy who can, or a woman who can, call on their abilities instantly and maybe get inspired or have a pattern. But I've seen Zappa be like a UFO in concert, like just unbelievable environment of music and sound. So I can imagine what Steve Vai witnessed at a sound check. It's almost like Zappa was possessed. And the rest, I'm just going to play like 20 seconds. Listen to this. This is a footage of him playing. It's not the recording of that sound check, but look at what's crammed in there. even though the YouTube's not perfect. Listen to this. Yeah, it borders on madness. It's slightly cacophonous. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't even know how many instruments are playing there, but he's in the middle of it, roaring along. And yeah. If you don't mind that kind of sound, it's the richest, deepest, thickest ecstatic expression going.
Was that a YouTube clip? Because that's what I heard last week, and I wanted to ask you. What?
Yeah, I played that last week. Actually.
Yeah.
You want to know which particular clip that is?
Yes.
Steve, I think it's called Steve Vai on Zappa. And it has a headshot of himself. And then there's many minutes of him talking. And then he gets to that part. And then they show Frank playing. And it's at a different angle looking up at Frank. And he's just wailing. You know, it's like Frank was expressing the wide open effect of iondom or ion spaces that was coming. And no musical rules applied. He just was possessed by the space. I mean, look, this is what the hell's going on here? And I tell you, when you see that live in the eighth row, it's fucking unbelievable. Like, it's not even music. I don't know what it is. It's a it's an intensity. He's actually communicating non-physical tones. The sound is only approximating what he's talking about, what he's trying to communicate. And he's got really good other musicians in there keeping up with him as much as possible. But I can imagine every now and then he just goes way beyond human level, and that's what Steve Vai witnessed one day. He said, I've never seen anybody play. I don't know what – he'd probably say, I don't know what Frank was doing. It was probably multiple Franks playing. Multiple guys playing right there beside each other.
That's funny you say that because when I heard that, because, you know, I love the guitar, tried to play the guitar and heard a lot of leads, but then listening to Frank, it's almost like, you know, normally you hear lead guitar, it's like accentuates what the band is playing, but in that clip there, he was leading the rest of the band. They were following him.
Yeah.
They were following him in that lead. But that goes, it sparks a memory of what I remember hearing George Duke, and it just blew my mind, is that first thing George said that Frank was very underrated. They underrated Frank as a guitar player, and he said he was so amazed how Frank could improvise that he asked him, how did he do it? And Frank told him he sees shapes. When he's improvising, he sees shapes coming together, squares, triangles, rectangles, coming together, and he sees that, and he just plays based on what he sees, based on that. That's, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to talk about.
Hey, you know what that is? If you imagine tactility as the organ that's organizing the sensory data, and so all the sensory data is coming into the central organizer, central scrutinizer, it would come, who knows what it would look like to that organ, but it would look like shapes. Different patterns. And that reminds me another thing. This idea that the holopathic is both the co-anesthetic and the synesthetic, that popular image of the fractal where a pattern happens and then it disperses into a bunch of other Baroque spirals. Then it comes back to the pattern. Then it disperses. The disperses would be the synesthetic, and the coming back would be the co-anesthetic, the reintegration. But the very popular fractal image, and it's not the fractal that Ion talks about in the angel diagram. That's a whole different thing. But the fractal imagery that's popularized is a good visualization of the tactile interplay of co-anesthesia and synesthesia, of unity and diversity. So I wanted to say that hours ago. But back to this thing, so seeing shapes is like what tactility would do. To me, it was these shapes of frequencies of sound and touch and movement. and vision would be flowing in, and something's got to organize it. Or maybe nothing that organizes it. It's already organized. I don't know.
No, that spark is something, because when you, the first time that you and Roxana talked, the first week, weekend of discussing Zappa, Roxana did some descriptions of about a certain state of mind that a musician gets in to improvisation. And when I heard that, I thought about that, and I wanted to ask her some questions if she could repeat that. Because that's amazing to just think, because each one of his, I mean, didn't you say a week ago or so that he never planned his lead? Like what he did there, what you just played, he didn't practice that. That just came out.
No. Right. He does not rehearse. And you know, this amazing guitar experience Steve I is talking about happened during a sound check. They come in the afternoon, check the instrument, Zappa is very particular, and they start playing, and then all of a sudden he gets possessed and he just goes wailing, or whatever he did. It was not planned. I don't know who he's playing with or what the context was, but Frank does not rehearse. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yes.
The band has to rehearse every day, you know, 5 or 6 days a week or something, you know, for weeks and months before the tour, and they have different guys lead the rehearsal. People have been there for the band longer. Then Frank will come in later in the day, halfway through the day, and then start giving new ideas, laying out. There's always, every day was new things, and they have to change what they rehearsed all the night before. They could change it, do it differently the next night.
Yeah, it's
so you think of Frank walking around. What?
No, it's a musical genius. It's a musical genius.
Right. Now he's walking around thinking music all the time, and thinking whatever else goes into it, and he's radiating this power byproduct of it. That to me is imitating me walking around with the ionic effect, sending out the new song.
Yeah.
Now, Kyle posted something. What's he say? And this is in the InQuick. He says, if a young Elvis walked out on stage today, you would see an artist. The reason there are no artists is because there's no Elvis or Michael Jackson on earth right now. That's a ridiculous statement. Just a bunch of average talent being, trying to be artists. Bullshit. So kind. There's more artists than there ever were. And there's so much innovation. I mean, I find songs every week. There's not a monoculture. Back then, I'm reading the history of rock and roll. It was a tiny little world. So if someone had some talent like Elvis, they could dominate easily. So yeah, he was an artist of his time, but he would not be relevant to today. The artist of today is me. I'm the artist of today. I'm not, you know, Warhol would get other people to make his art for him. Well, I'm created a fucking thing that creates whole world for my art. And I include Carol in that. So music is not that important to the younger people. They're in tactile interplay. Some of them might find music interesting, but in general, they've been tactilized. They're not in the ear anymore. So Kyle's terms are silly. Michael Jackson, that guy was a whack job or nothing. I mean, there's not any of his music that I would listen to. Elvis I'd listen to a little bit. But in one show here, there's all kinds of great songs that I heard today that I played for the first time that I will go back and listen to. I'm not going to go back and listen to Elvis. I'm going to listen to these different guys that I played that I never heard of before. There's so much incredible creativity that, you know, they're not changing the world like Elvis did, because that world that's been changed and dumped. People don't need to change the world. What world? Where is the world? What are the boundaries of the world? Everybody, once they get their iPhone, is equally powerful in shaping whatever's happening on their YouTube, Facebook, social media contraption. We're living in a world of the most glorified interpersonal ESP that no civilization has ever had. Maybe we're not ascended, so maybe when the ascended continent had some pretty different kind of experiences, but for little man, this is the little man supernova. Little man's doing pretty damn good of entertaining itself. And there's no dominant figures. There's no dominant figures. There's too many people contributing. Look, if we go... Listen to the beginnings of what we did today. Just the variety. Let's see. Start off, this guy's pretty good. I don't even know him. Viderbusk. Now this guy goes into a really wild guitar later, but I'm not going to wait till we get there. Nathaniel Radeliff. It is this new kind of halting singing.
Let it be. Look at here, baby, it's all I got. One more time, give me all, yeah. Juvenile delinquent wreck. Oh man, I need
the guy just before Mata Hoopoe that we're hearing now is Nathaniel Rateliff. Alyssa says, I know Nathaniel Rateliff. I like his music. Or I like this piece that we're playing. So Alyssa knows him. She just said that. Alyssa's been saying, let's see. Yeah, to call in, Alyssa. Jeez, what's where are you? She says, Frank's solos are both the melody, and she's a musician, so she might know what she's talking about. Frank's solos are both the melody, in brackets the story, and the atonal, the space. He's improving and therefore jazzing. Maybe she means he's improvising. He's improving, therefore jazzing. Then she says, Frank is both showing up and leaving through improv. Dropping in, dropping out. Freaking in, freaking out. The both and. And then, I know Nathaniel Rateliff. So, there you have it. Let's see if she called in. Anybody calling in? Well, Sarah's there. Do you want to say something, Sarah? That's little Sarah, I think.
Actually, I've been listening to Bert for several weeks now. And I've heard you say several times, Bert, that you find music intimidating. And I hear you saying that you don't feel like you have a good basic grasp on it. And I just, I've been really,
well,
really
thinking
about
it. That's when I was younger.
Well, I've been working on
it. To learn reading.
Okay. What was it?
It's when I was younger to read music. I don't find
yes,
music
okay.
intimidating.
Even better, because I've been working on a diagram chart for you that shows solfège or solfaggio, depending on where you live. It's a form of teaching people pitch to sight reading, and you can use hand signals. It also lines up with the chakras, and I was going to put the information that would tell you what, like the chants, like om, and Mani and all of those, they line up to the A, B, C, D, or Do, Re, Mi. Do is actually C, just not to confuse you too much. But I was working on making a chart that will show you where in the body those notes resonate and also how they correspond to other aspects of life that you actually, I think, understand a great deal. Like, I feel like it must have been a discrepancy where someone wanted you to learn it a certain way, and I really feel like I have an idea of a chart that would give you the confidence of and like kind of show you, look, you already know this. But it was
okay, Sarah. Just take a break, yeah. Minute, Sarah. I'm muting you. Is that Alyssa just called in, anonymous? Someone just called in. Who's that? It's not listening or not speaking. Okay, back to Sarah. I just wanted to check in case she was pressed for time. Okay, back to you, Sarah.
Well, that's about it. I just really wanted to, if anything, just reiterate that I have a lot of faith in you, Bert. I really do think that you understand it, maybe even from struggling to grasp it in your childhood. I think you have a better understanding than most people. Sometimes it's hard to show that if it's
you don't
an innate
understand
understanding.
You don't
well, but
understand
I keep hearing Bert say that he wishes he could or that he wants to, and I feel like, honestly, Bert, I feel like you do. I just think it needs shown in a pattern that you already understand that you didn't realize was musical. That's all.
Okay, so look at the variety. I was just running through, Bert. And I'll keep an eye. Alyssa's trying to call in. I don't know why she has to make an effort. Maybe it's where she is or something. But listen to the next song. This is the variety here. This one.
So you're facing a crowded place. So beautiful you are. It was like the I'm feeling
Effects of the RNA drops is being slightly stoned. You know, when you're stoned, you like anything pretty well. I think that's what's happening to me. I like anything. It's reasonable. I don't even know. It's not even that. These songs may be boring to everybody or stupid or something. I play a little more rockabilly than usual, but or jump music, they called it. But everything is fucking good. Now, this is just a preamble. Next week, people, a new Bob. A new Bob next week. Get ready for it. If all goes well, it'll happen. What would be the date? December 19th. Bob is number 19, so very appropriate. December 19th. Get ready for a new Bob, a new expression of Dobbstown. Never been seen before. Get ready. Be excited all week long. Chat it up on Dukes. I can't wait. I can't sleep. New Bob showing up. Re-Bob, new Bob. This will make Elvis and Michael Jackson look like fucking pikers.
But you know, it may be that you hear more. I mean, there's more sound that you hear. I mean, because I hear all the instruments, or yeah. I can focus. Sometimes I can go in and hear, like maybe the drummer, but then you also hear the whole. It's just a different listening now for me.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to understand anything. It's just all pleasurable.
Maybe that's what it is.
What's to understand here? I don't understand this good feeling I'm having. I like Nathaniel Rateliff, or whatever his name is.